From the highest mountains to the bluest seas, the driest deserts to the icy poles, Kate Turkington has traveled there, and now she's inviting you to travel with her through your radio. Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And a very good morning to you, and a belated Happy New Year. This is my first program of 2025, so very excited to be back and to be talking to you. You know, High FM broadcasts to 80 different countries, so wherever you are in the world, whether you're here in South Africa like I am, or wherever you are, a very good morning to you, and may 2025 be a fantastic year, which of course it will be. And I'm going to be talking this morning about tourism, particularly local tourism, because it really is coming back to life in leaps and bounds. And tourism is on the rise again. And I was telling you, at the end of 2024, I'd been doing a trip all over the Lofoten and Kruger, and absolutely everywhere we went, the camps were full of people, mainly foreigners. But this morning I'm going to be chatting to, I don't know, Chris, if you like to be called a doyen because you're too young. I'm allowed to be called a doyen with the capital double N. But Chris Harvey, my guest, is owner and manager of the lovely and hugely popular Rissington Inn in Hazyview. I'm sure many of you have stayed there. And before that, and I'm sure many, many of you will remember Sibele Forest Lodge. It was such a legend in the Lowveld. Chris used to be working there, managing there. Then he went off to Fugitive's Drift, another legendary South African game lodge in KZN. You know, that overlooks the battlefields of Isandlwana and Rorke's Drift. So, long introduction, Chris, but a very good morning to you. And
good morning, Kate.
And let's first talk about, because you've been 30 years at the absolute pinnacle of tourism. So talk to us about some of the changes you've seen over the years in domestic tourism, because I know you travel elsewhere as well.
Yeah, it's been, I mean, obviously I started in 1982, so yep. The South African tourism market was a totally different ballgame in those days. There was no international tourism to speak of at all. There were a few Dutch and British tourists who'd come here in pursuit of what they called old colonial splendor. And that was really how all those country hotels, of which Sibele was a great example, even a trailblazer, came to be. But the vast majority of all of our tourism was domestic. It was for the Lowveld here. It was all from Johannesburg. In the winter, we got a bit from the Cape. And we just had to survive on what we got, because we didn't know, you know, we didn't know politically what was going to happen. And we were subject to all kinds of restrictions in terms of travel from overseas. So it was one of the strange things about the last couple of years. I always felt that those apartheid years were in a way like, a bit like a sort of practice for COVID, in that we suddenly closed down again. And it is one of the odd reasons why our tourism sector is so extraordinarily resilient, is it just adapts to conditions, it adapts to world conditions. So the last couple of years, the most recent part of my career, have been so very similar to the beginning, where you felt completely cut off and just had to make do. And that has been the most fascinating aspect of it all, really, is how the tourists that we've had have changed. You were talking about, Kate, you were talking about domestic tourism in Kruger particularly is very, very strong. Mm-hmm. But in the lodge business, there's been a tendency to always rely on the international tourists because we feel that they've got more money, which of course they haven't, but it makes it more effective, more financially effective for them to come here maybe than the locals. So we adapt. And in the last 5 years, we've all had to drop our prices to get domestic tourism. And in doing so, we've completely changed the demographic of tourism, which is really interesting.
Okay. I'm coming back to Chris in a moment.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. And we're talking domestic tourism today, and I'm talking to Chris Harvey, as I say, owner and manager of hugely popular Rissington Inn in Hazyview. When I tried to get in there, okay, Chris, admittedly it was peak time, Christmas, whatever, but it took me three very determined efforts to finally come and stay with you. But we'll talk more about that later. You were talking about the changes in domestic tourism. And what are tourists looking for now, whether they're international or local? What would you say they're looking for?
I think it's the great conundrum of South Africa is that they're actually looking for totally different things. So the international tourist nowadays is looking for the most part, absolutely top end. So they want to stay where Elton John stayed. You know, why that would be a particular appeal, I can't imagine. But it is one of those strange things where Instagram and where celebrities publicize that somebody stayed there, everybody else wants to go there. And that's where the influencers come in. And it changes entirely the way that we source our international tourism. But the domestic tourist is looking for the absolute opposite. He's looking to get away from the international tourist. He doesn't want to be patronized by a great sort of wealthy swamp of people coming down and making him feel he doesn't really belong in his own country, which is a slightly controversial thing to say, but it is one of the issues at Rissington, as you know, Kate. It's a sort of 3¾, 4-star sort of establishment. Yeah. Is we appeal to both. So somebody might come to us from Malamala, a top game reserve, and somebody else might come to us from sort of Barberton for the weekend. And they have totally different expectations, and they don't really get on. They kind of deny each other's existence. But the issue is, of course, that international tourists book so much earlier, which makes it much more difficult for domestic tourists to get in, which is part of what you're referring to with your booking. I mean, we're 70% international tourism. It's not something we choose. And when we set up Rissington in 1995, our target market was very specifically South African, Johannesburg weekenders. We priced it accordingly. So now we're just dirt cheap for internationals with very high expectations and difficult to get into for the local market with a much more relaxed expectation of what they want to find in a South African hotel. So it's a challenge to keep those two balanced.
It's quite interesting because Chris, as you know, I've just finished updating a very big international travel guide to South Africa, and so many foreigners in particular, obviously I'm generalizing, think South Africa is just the Cape. And nothing else. And this is something I wrote in the latest edition. It's very short. When I was introducing Mpumalanga, I said it's one of the most beautiful and diverse provinces in the country. Mpumalanga, where the sun rises, it's South Africa's wildest and most exciting province. Why? Its local history is action-packed. You've got local wars, international battles, and a gold rush that was every bit as raucous as the Klondike or California. And then I finished by saying in that very short introduction, nowhere else in the country can you spend one day seeing spectacular wildlife. I mean, the real thing, you've got game reserves in the Cape and whatever. It ain't the real thing. I'm sorry. Lofoten and Kruger is the real thing. So nowhere else in the country can you spend one day seeing spectacular wildlife. The next, climbing up the escarpment, and people forget that Blyde River Canyon is the third largest canyon in the world and the greenest. It has that moniker, it's the greenest because of all the lovely vegetation. And then the third day, poking around some of the most historic towns in South Africa. I mean, it is an amazing province. And you obviously decided to come home, in a way, from KZN to Mpumalanga. That was a deliberate choice, was it, Chris?
Yes, it was. I mean, you struck a really important point in terms of what we were discussing earlier as well, in that in the old days, the bad old days, the tourism levels for the three areas were very balanced. So the Cape didn't dominate the way it does now. So in for domestic tourism, the Eastern Transvaal, as it was then called, was the Mecca. Everybody wanted to go to God's Window. Everybody wanted to go to the places that they'd been to, Feld School, at Pilgrim's Rest, all those names. So the international tourist takes it a bit more educating as far as that is concerned, to persuade them of the value. And the majority of the internet, vast majority, I don't know the numbers, but 85, 90% of international tourists actually never even come outside the game reserve. So they might come to Kruger or to the Sabi Sand or some Timbavati, but they won't venture as far as Hazy View, which is all of a 15-minute drive. And then they don't see the canyon, and they don't see all the other spectacular, the Genesis route around Barberton, the, you know, the oldest mountains in the world. We've got amazing things here. So that's changed, and it's a much bigger challenge us for quite, as you say, also to sort of counter the pressure from the Eastern Cape in terms of wildlife view, because they're not the same. You're quite right, but then we are both biased.
And I was going to say, you mentioned some of these spectacular things. People also, even local people, don't know about the cluster of waterfalls. No, almost nowhere else in the world is there a cluster of five beautiful waterfalls, and very easy to drive to, very easy to see. You can picnic at some of them. Again, some of these places are just not known at all. Maybe in Mpumalanga needs a better tourism budget. Or is that swimming in dangerous waters?
Well, maybe it just needs to spend it a bit more wisely. But yes, those are dangerous waters. But I mean, your point on KwaZulu-Natal is also important, because it's suffering as a domestic destination at the moment because of the problems with the seawater cleanliness and so on. And the battlefield tourism that David Rattray started at Fugitive Drift 35 years ago now, was a really promising new source of tourists from international markets, particularly the British market, because they were so involved in all the conflicts that were covered by the battlefields. But that's also dying out, because those people are not traveling anymore. I mean, they were all the old sort of pucker generals who wanted to come and say, I would have done this differently, and da 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 da. So once they've died out, you've got to find a new young international tourism market for KwaZulu-Natal. And replace that market, and you've lost your domestic market to a very large extent. So these things do fluctuate. I mean, hopefully they sort themselves out. They're political, they're geographical, they're very much to do with the age of people who are traveling.
Yeah, I'm going to come back to you.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. I'm talking to Chris Harvey, who I described him as a doyen, which I don't know how old you have to be to be a doyen. I think you're probably not old enough, Chris, but you do have such enormous experience in domestic tourism, from Sabili Lodge all those years ago to Fugitive Drift, and now at Rissington in Hazy View. And talking about Hazy View, I think a lot of people also don't know how vibrant and buzzing some of these low-felt towns are. You've got Hazy View. There's so much to do there. You've got Hoedspruit. You've got Mbombela. You've got those beautiful botanical gardens. I mean, it's, you know, I try my small ways to tell people there's so much more to South Africa than the Cape, which is beautiful and lovely, but also a bit boring, I think.
It's very different. I mean, one of the issues is that the two places, the two regions, so the northeast of the country, including maybe KZN and the Cape, are actually better visited at different times of the year.
Yes.
So one of the issues is that people going to Cape Town for the summer weather of December through to March won't be coming up here because it's raining and it's humid and it's been raining. I mean, all those attractions you described, all those towns are currently underwater.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, it's wonderful. It's a difficult tourism destination to sell internationally. Domestically, it's a little easier. And that's why when COVID struck and we became totally dependent on domestic tourism for a year and a half because of the various changes that were made to to politicians' views on South Africa over that time. The young Johannesburg market, especially the black market, jumped in here and just had the time of their lives in Mpumalanga without international tourists to block their way or form queues a totally different form of tourism. A Joburg township or
Chris seems to have frozen there. Craig Guthrie's sorting it out here. Here we are. You're back. Sorry, Chris. We lost you. We just lost you for a moment there, and you were talking about this new young domestic audience or clientele you're getting.
Yeah. So when they were sort of what we were dependent on totally for the post-COVID or the during COVID era, they came down here for a totally different purpose to the international tourists. They're not particularly interested in wildlife. They're not particularly interested in going on 6 o'clock in the morning game drives. But they are party animals. They love to come down here and just jaw. So all the waterfalls you described had picnickers sitting there all day, drinking, partying, having a great time. It was wonderful tourism process. And it was totally African and totally spontaneous and very, very exciting. And it kind of made us realize what we were missing out on by not being able to accommodate our domestic tourists at other times when everybody else is booked earlier. The price has dropped. And then you've got the issue that those people say, well, why, you know, you want us now because you can't get anybody else. But as soon as the thing is over, you're going to push your prices back up and take only internationals. And that's something that tourism definitely needs to deal with in this country. Cape Town is totally beyond the domestic markets.
But it's quite interesting because when I stayed with you, there were Dutch people, there were French people, there were local people. It was a great, great mix of people there. Some, you know, you've got the Fabini Gate to Kruger, 10 minutes away, 50 minutes. Some were there to go to Kruger, others were there to see some of these attractions we've been talking about. And in your long career, Chris, you must have had some very, very strange experiences. Tell us about some of the worst to begin with. You must have had some really hairy. Yes, as you must have had some hairy experiences.
Yeah, the early days of Rissington was absolute torture. I mean, the concrete on the floors of the rooms wasn't even dry when the first people checked in. So they woke up in a bed that was about 3 inches lower than the one they'd got into, and their tackies were covered in cement. And it sort of went on like that. But one of the things is, you as a hotelier, you have to actually train your guests to behave is not quite the right expression, but to temper their expectations, because it's always the people who book on booking.com and they book the cheapest room and they come expecting the best room that they saw on the internet. It's a diplomat's job the whole time, as well as obviously you have to be an electrician and a plumber, and now you have to be a Wi-Fi expert, and you have to be able to give directions from here to Cape Town for people who think they're going to get there in a day. We had people who thought they were going to Namibia for the day. They were going to drive to Namibia for the day. They'd have lunch in Windhoek and be back here for dinner. And that's just sort of, it's an education process of just trying to not be foolish, but to keep them safe.
I think you've raised a very, very important point there about expectations. I've got a grandson who's a game ranger, and he says so often people, you know, it's getting better, he says, but they think it's National Geographic. So on a morning game drive, you're going to see a lion kill, a leopard kill, a cheetah kill, white lions, a black rhino, the works. And very often it's the fault of the middle person, middle man, middle woman, middle they, whatever, or the agent or who hasn't given them the right information, because expectations are crucial, must be managed. How would you manage those?
Well, one of the issues is that the people are very bad at researching their own holidays because they expect the internet to do that for them now.
Yeah.
So they'll say, nobody told me it was going to rain in February. So it has rained in February since the dawn of time in this area. So we're sorry, but there's nothing we can do about that. Nobody told me that I wouldn't see a springbuck in the Kruger National Park. Nobody told me that there were fences in the Kruger National Park. What a strange comment, but I didn't think it was going to be fenced. So I think they think there's a possibility an elephant might just wander through Rissington from Kruger. And that's a disappointment for them. You have to temper by getting people to understand before they come that it's up to them to find out what you eat. In our market, which is a complicated market, as I said earlier, because it includes so many five-star and so many three-star tourists, we go back to them with a list of information and say, please bear in mind the following. You have not booked a five-star hotel. And this is what you can expect, and this is what you can not expect.
Yeah.
Because we don't want people to be disappointed. But also, we're at the mercy of absolutely every keyboard warrior who's going to then make a review, which may or may not have any sort of vestige of fairness in terms of whether the client themselves had chosen the wrong place to stay. It's a worldwide problem. It's not only a South African problem. But the review drives it.
It's interesting you say that, because I've been looking up and reading travel trends for 2025. And obviously AI, artificial intelligence, you know, is going to be able to plot an itinerary for you, give you information. But I love your expression, a keyboard warrior. You use it wisely. You don't just take it for, you know, facts. You can investigate. You can say, but what do you mean by so-and-so? You know, investigate properly. Don't believe the brochures and the website. And, oh, talking of AI, this is a particular grudge of mine. If I read once more on somebody's website this hidden gem nestling in a green valley, it's all AI, it's all purple prose. And some of the most expensive websites of Lani places have got this purple prose. And also you've got things like TripAdvisor, and somebody can put something really mean up. But you're in like a mine all the time, aren't you, if you're in the tourism business?
Yeah, and everybody wants to be a travel writer nowadays.
Exactly.
So, you know, me and the wife went out and had dinner. Me and the wife had the chicken. It was a bit tough. You know, really. I mean, do we have to read this? But I mean, your point about AI, I can link that with travel writing, because, as you know, I used to write for the Sunday Times on the accidental tourist column quite often. And about 2 years ago, when AI first came out, we did an experiment where we told it to write a review of Plettenberg Bay in the style of Chris Harvey of the Sunday Times. It did it within about 10 seconds. But the only reason I knew for a fact that it wasn't mine, or would have known, is that it used the word nestle, which I would never ever use. So you've just absolutely struck it. But it's very easy for any newspaper to write a piece, but then they'll recommend three restaurants that have been closed for 5 years.
Exactly. You know,
it's not up to date. It's not. It's a very unsafe source of information.
Exactly.
But yeah, it's an issue. TripAdvisor is a huge issue for us. We do control it better than we used to, and it's far less dominant than it was, because now Google's in there. But we don't really get a right reply. So whatever this wannabe travel writer's written stands as truth, because
You make that point. Everybody wants to be a travel writer. You know, I say I've been traveling to all kinds of places, and everybody says, oh, it's such a glamorous, whatever life. And it is a wonderful life, but you work, you work damn hard, and you sing for your supper, and all you have, it's a bit like you at Rissington Inn, all you have is your reputation. And once that goes, then you ain't anything anymore. So it's hard work, you know, being a travel writer or being in tourism business. I know, Chris, you get a lot of repeat visitors. How does that work? Do they just come and love a place, whether it's now or whether it was Fugitive's Drift or whatever? And also word of mouth.
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. I think I've been lucky enough to work in three places that have a very strong owner hosting concept. In with that, with the Jefferies at Sibeli, with the Rat Race at Fugitive Drift, and my own here. But it's the idea that people feel that they're coming to visit someone that they know and that they are part of a kind of club. You know, if you come back, when you come back, Kate, your first margarita will be on the house, and you will know that we remembered you were coming, and there'll be a note in your room, and you haven't been here since such and such a date, and we're so looking for, and they become part of that. We also do a newsletter, which I know you've seen, the most recent one, which is the recent Rissington Rag that goes out every 3 months, which kind of gives an inside track on tourism and tells stories about guests who behave strangely, guests who took photographs of guests. It's always the Netherlands, I think. I always seem to have a go at the Netherlands, but Dutch guests who hang their underwear out on the stoops to dry when they've done their own washing in the room because they're too mean to pay for us to do it. And those stories are name and shamed in the Rag, which is the newsletter. And so the people who read that, which is about 10,000 people, believe that they're on an inside track. And they therefore keep coming out of that sort of shared loyalty. They're loyal to us because we.
What is that website address, Chris?
Well, the Rag is on the Rissington website, so it's just rissington.co.za. But under the blog section, every 3 months, a newsletter goes out.
Sorry, you talking about guests. I remember once, quite a few years ago, being in the Okavango, and it happened to be an American company, although Americans make wonderful guests. An American couple checked into a tent. It was in the days before those camps got really larny. And there was a spider in the room. They checked straight out again. They wanted the plane called back. And I mean, we wanted to say, you know, hello, this is Africa. There is wildlife. I think that's happened less now. But even so, one hears from my grandson, I hear all kinds of stories as well. And your best stories, Chris?
Well, I mean, my best stories would I couldn't possibly tell you, because they would be publicized beyond the wishes of the culprits. But we've had people try to commit suicide in a room. I mean, that's not the best story, but it's the most shocking. So we just sort of failed, luckily. But you have to be prepared for absolutely anything that happens. People come here and are unwell, and people come here and are expecting to be going on game drives on the property. People come with the most bizarre dietary requirements that we now have to be able to pander to. And that's what we've done. We've changed the way that we run our businesses, because we respond to the guest rather than actually offering what we think the guest should be booking. Yeah. And that's where your comments earlier and come in again, is that our job is to be honest about what we provide, but it's very much up to the client to read between the lines and make sure that they're getting what they want. So a good travel writer is crucial to that, because a good travel writer will play up the things that the lodge does best and prides itself in, and play down the areas where it wasn't so strong. So if the food's not great, then you didn't talk in the article about your food, but you did say the rooms are wonderful, the view was great, the staff were great. So even if, as you say, you're singing for your supper, and we feel as travel writers that we're obliged to be complimentary, we can still make sure that what we write is to the person who reads it carefully will emphasize the things
absolutely
that are good and the things that are not so good.
I can remember.
I don't want to tell you horror stories about Rissington, Kate. I'm not going to tell you any horror stories about what happened to Rissington. The guy that electrocuted himself in his room. I mean, that would be a terrible story to have a guy on the radio. But they do happen every day. I mean, we had a crisis overnight last night where the Eskom went down, and we've had no water for the last 12 hours, and that's still ongoing. Things take a long time to sort out here. So it's a full-time job. You can't
Getting back to travel writing, as you said, it's how you put it. I can remember writing, and I think it still holds actually in the one guide, if you go to a certain camp in the McCarty Pains, for example, I say, if you're not too steady on your pins, maybe this isn't the best camp for you. You say, look, there are a real lot of stairs in this place. I stayed at one place that had 15 quite rickety stone steps. And you phrase it nicely, but you just let people know that Perhaps. And again, I think before I saw you, I was staying at a very lonely camp with a whole bunch of third-generation Texans who were wonderful, actually. But they had a very old man with them. And he was, they obviously helped him into the back of the game of vehicle and everything. But I could see he wasn't comfortable. And I said, and I've actually written it in the new guide, if you're not too, if you are a bit rickety, if you're not too sound of wind and limb, sit beside the ranger. You know, it's quite okay to do that. Your view might be a bit blocked because you've got a tracker in front of you, but you'll be much more comfortable. You don't have to sit at the back and have all the African massage be shaken to bits. And just a final question, Chris, the future. What do you think's the future of tourism in South Africa? Big question, I know.
Yeah, that's the final question. How long have I got? I was actually going to quickly tell you a story about the rain because we
wanted a good story about a past.
We had one of Margaret Thatcher's cabinet here, and he had now been elevated to the lordship and was a frightfully grand, and so was his wife, a British traveller. And we had a couple of old ladies who were also from Britain, but from a very different part of Britain to these two. And it had rained and rained and rained for weeks. This was about 20 years ago in the first floods. And everybody was trying to get their laundry clean and dry. But lady, whatever her name was, and I won't name her, but you will have heard of her, said, I can't get my underwear dry. And this old lady from the other side of the soup stands up in the middle of the room and says, I've got an idea. She said, why don't we tie her ladyship's bloomers to the fan and turn it on? That'll get them dry. You had this vision of all these ample underwear hanging from this drape from the fans on the stoop going round at dinner so that her ladyship would be comfortable in the morning.
And but did her ladyship allow her knickers to be tied to the fan? I love that.
But the future, we don't know what the future is, Kate. This country responds all the time to change. And as long as the world is not at war, we're in a very safe position because we aren't aligned, because we don't have any particular gripe with any country. Our Eastern European tourism has grown dramatically, and I noticed that particularly in East Africa when I was there earlier in the year. So there are still untapped markets for us that need to come to. We are lucky in some respects that we don't have mass tourism, because that responds very badly to any instability. Yes. So we don't have huge numbers of coach tours and charter flights and so on. It'd be lovely to have the people here, but they're not a stable market.
No.
So our current European market, our American market, and our Australasian market is very stable, and that's what we need. And we need to look after our domestic market. You started with that, and let's end with this. It's so important that our domestic market feels welcome in its own hotels. There is nothing worse than seeing somebody being treated by a guest as a lesser human being because they're South African. What are you doing here? This is an international hotel. And we really, really see that.
Yeah.
And that's part of the staff's diplomacy and their skills at making sure that everyone that comes here feels that they're here with whoever comes. And it's not their hotel. It's not an international hotel. It's an everybody hotel.
Okay, Chris, thanks so, so much. And please come on again. Tell us some more of your stories. Great, great, great talking to you. And that website, by the way, is just rissingtonin.com. Again, Chris? Yes,
.co. Rissington.co.za.
Rissington.
RISSINGTON.
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks so much.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And I'm going to be chatting now about some of the trends. I've been reading a lot, doing a lot of international research on travel trends for 2025. You're going to laugh at some of them, and you're going to hold up your hands in horror at some of them. Some of them make a lot of good sense. Okay, obviously the experiential stuff, that's been growing and growing now for a long time. What do I mean by experiential? Walking on the wild side, going hiking, homestays, although I would just watch very carefully what you do. a homestay, like volunteering at an elephant sanctuary or all kinds of it, where you're actually hands-on. I suppose that's a way of describing experiential. And I see it when I travel. People want to do stuff. They just don't want to sit and be told stuff. They want to be out there doing that. So, and of course, South Africa is a wonderful, wonderful country. We've got everything. We've got mountains. We've got bush. We've got sea. We've got desert. The Karoo. It's just such a wonderful place to visit too. So that's definitely a big, big trend, which has been happening for the last few years. Then there's something called noctourism, NOC, noctourism. What's that? It's nighttime travel experiences. So, for example, some of the museums are opening late at night. I'm going off to Turkey in April. I'll tell you more about that another time. And now apparently you can go into the Topkapi Museum at night. And, of course, the Egyptian Museum. I haven't been to Egypt since the new Grand Egyptian Museum. That's what it's called, the Grand Egyptian Museum. The last time I went, it was still in the middle of Cairo, but we did go into the mummy room at night. That was quite exciting. Some of the visitors found it quite scary and macabre. I loved it, seeing whichever king it was. Those mummies are absolutely fantastic. And now, of course, that new museum, just talking about that, I'm dying to visit it again. Apparently it's an architectural marvel. It's built right next to the pyramids on the Giza plateau. And it just opened last October. And apparently it's not quite finished yet, but 12 halls, as they call them, are open. And when it is finished, and I'm still already, it's going to be one of the largest and most modern museums in the world. I think that's, I must try and go back to Egypt, I think. But going back to noctourism, for example, you can visit bioluminescent beaches. I have been on them quite by chance, not by doing noctourism, but that's quite wonderful when you're, or if you've been on a ship at sea and you suddenly see the waves flickering and bioluminescence, I suppose is the only way to describe it. It's quite magical. And then things like the Northern Lights, seeing those at night too. So noctourism. And of course, I suppose we do have it in our game reserves because you can do take an organized, guided late night game drive. Then there's something called calmcations. I mean, where they come up with these names, heaven knows. But these are holidays focused on creating a sense of tranquility. So you're going to a spa, or you're going to a retreat, or you're going to some ashram in India, or at the moment that amazing Hindu festival is on in India, in the north of India. It used to be called Islamabad. Can't remember the new name. But over 2.5 million people going to be there. That can't be very restful, I imagine. But obviously there are quiet retreats. We've got things I was just thinking, like Brookdale and the Natal Midlands. There are all kinds of places where you can just go and unwind and whatever. Anyway, they're called calmcations. So we've had noctourism, we've had calmcations. And then Chris was talking, we were talking briefly about AI, how it is going to change travel a lot. And if you've never used it, people get very anxious about it and think, oh, it's not for me. Just go onto any one of your, whatever you're on, whether you're on, I don't know, whatever use a platform you're on, just go onto it, Chrome or whatever, and just type in Chat GPT, or one word, capital letters, Chat GPT, and a little box will come up and it will ask you, yes, how can I help you? And you say, well, I want to go to Mauritius, and this is my budget, and I wonder if you could suggest some few things for me. And they might say, well, are you interested in water sports, or would you like to go to the botanical gardens? And you say, no, I'd rather do X, Y, and Z. Chat GPT, I use it for all kinds of things. I use it obviously as a kind of information channel, but it is so simple. Don't, as Chris was saying, rely on it always for if you've got warts, you could say, act as if you're a doctor and tell me about warts, but get that, but, you know, ask your doctor too, kind of thing. Okay, I'm going to be back with some more holiday trends for 2025.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
Experiential stuff, nocturism, calmcations, travel meets AI. I'll tell you about some of the others next week. It's like staying long. Top destinations, I don't agree. I did a lot of research, went to newspapers, magazines. I don't go along with some of the top destinations, but I'll tell you more about that next week. And I'll also tell you about some of my favourite destinations. And of course, you can't go to many now. I mean, that's why I say travel while you can. You can't go to Tibet anymore because Tibet, I mean, it's been ground up by the Chinese. You can't go to Kashmir, one of the most beautiful places on earth, in there at the top of India. So travel while you can, while you're healthy. You know, that thing of spend the kids' inheritance or whatever, the ski holidays. Do it while you can. Carpe diem. That's my philosophy always. Has been. So, and always let me know. You can send me a WhatsApp, or you can, I didn't give you the number, but it's 061-895-1019. And you can always send me an email at kate@kateturkington.com. I'll always respond to them if you want to talk about something in particular. So, the sun is shining after a month, just marginally. I don't think it's going to last. That's in Johannesburg. The low felt has had almost, we can never say too much rain if you live in Africa, but it's had welcome, welcome rain. And wherever you are, I hope you're doing well and going well. Thanks to producer Senna Pabetsi, always to Craig Guthrie, sound engineer and genius who runs everything. And I'll be back next week. In the meantime, travel safely, look after yourselves, and look after others too.